The best in Bitcoin made audible. I am Guy Swan, and this is Bitcoin Audible. What is up, guys? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible. I am Guy Swan, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. And we are going to take we're going to take a day for a guy's take because of this AOP and the regulation around that's happening in, or has happened quite some time ago in Switzerland, and I think in Germany and Austria too. I at least saw those names come up about attesting to or being forced to as a customer to say, this is my address legally, to register that with the exchange for all the KYC exchanges. So yesterday I found out, and I'm sure, and this is really kind of when it blew up all over Twitter, of the AOPP. This is a new protocol that essentially allows the exchange to, it's basically like a URL that will just automatically open up with the relevant data necessary so that you can sign with an address in your wallet. Now, this has totally blown up on Twitter, and I think it's important to distinguish what this is versus what this isn't. So all I can do here is give you my whole thought process and my journey through this as I got this. It was yesterday morning, I think it was, or no, it was the day before. I don't know. It's been 2 days now, I guess. But my whole journey is I've been trying to figure out what the hell this is and digging into it. And I'm a little bit frustrated with it. So if it comes across in this episode, I apologize. I don't mean to be annoyed, but I wanted to get a whole bunch of other things done. I'm wrapping up an audiobook for Jimmy Song and Gary Leland, Bitcoin and the American Dream, a handful of really good authors, and I really wanted it done, and this has kind of distracted me from 2 days worth of work, so I'm really kind of just sick of it right now. But anyway, that's why I want to go ahead and get this episode out and be done with it. But I had conversations with a lot of different people, and then share my conclusion, what I think about it, and why. And then also, just because Bitbox is a sponsor of this show, I feel it's important to address this regardless. So when I first heard about it, it's being referred to, which now I think is really kind of disingenuous, because the protocol itself, like what this thing is, what AOP is, actually has nothing from a technical standpoint to do with the travel rule. But it's being referred to as the travel rule protocol. Like, that's what I've been seeing in headlines. Like a CoinDesk, I think it's like a travel rule protocol adopted by these wallets or whatever. And the subtitle, I've copied it here, was the protocol automatically identifies an unhosted wallet when crypto is withdrawn from a Swiss exchange. Man, that is really, really misleading. You know, my first reaction, and you can probably see, I left my original post up because I started tearing into Trezor, and my first reaction to this when I heard about it, described basically in that way, what I imagined is not what it was. And first thing I was thinking of, what is it, Thursday morning, was great. Now I have to start a conversation and, you know, cancel my sponsorship with Bitbox. This really looked bad, and everything about it was something that looked just something I did not want to support. And full disclosure, like throughout all of this, I'm trying to make what I think is my honest decision about it. Obviously, there's going to be, you know, Bitbox is paying me. Like, they're paying for this show, they're supporting the show. So there's going to be a degree, and I was aware of this as I was going through this. I've this tendency to want to defend Bitbox. And then also at the exact same time, there's this tendency to want to jump on with everybody else and just be like, yeah, fuck the man, and let's shut down AOP and all of this stuff. So I was kind of being pushed or pulled, I guess, in both directions. and just trying to make sense of all of this as honestly as I could for myself. And I'll tell you what I imagined at first. Like the idea that a Bitcoin wallet is going to quote unquote adopt a travel rule protocol, which the travel rule is absolute bullshit. It's absolutely ridiculous. It's essentially the idea that if you have a transaction of a certain amount, I think it's like $10,000, maybe it's like $1,000 in Switzerland and Netherlands. I didn't actually figure out which one it was. I probably should have clarified, but regardless, it's a stupid law no matter what the amount is. Basically, you have to register and they have to report. It's like the if you do a cash transaction in the U.S. of anything over $10,000, which I think is now, you know, the government is now trying to make like $600. You have to like fill out a thing and as a financial institution and send it to the government. It's absolutely retarded. I want absolutely nothing to do with it. I don't want it here in the United States, and I will viciously stand up against it if regulators attempt to push this. So when people refer to AOP, this rather ridiculously simple thing, as the travel rule protocol, quote unquote, I imagined a registration of your address in your wallet software that like connected to FATFA and or your exchange or whatever, and literally just let them know whenever you did a transaction of some certain amount. And a number of wallets were immediately listed as they were going to support this. It was Trezor. Trezor was the first one I heard about, then Bitbox, then Edge, Sparrow Wallet, Blue Wallet. And I was like, why on earth would any of these support this? Like, that's absolutely ridiculous. And my first response to, and Trezor was like, I think overly defensive, basically implying that what was stated about it was almost true. And I think because they were dismissive about it, excuse me, not dismissive, but they were so defensive about it on Twitter, I immediately jumped to like, holy shit, this is true. They're actually doing this. So I read Trezor's defense, their little thread on this. And the first, I'm leaving up my first response, which unfortunately has a ton of likes. And now I'm just like, I had a completely incorrect idea of what this was and what the issue was. Because my thinking was that, oh, there's going to be some new regulation passed, and here we are already bowing to it, already ready to comply. You know, we're setting it up so that there's not going to be any friction when this new regulation drops. And that to me is like, no, we should be protesting this, right? Like, the hell we want this travel rule here? Why are we accommodating it? So that's my default position. So Trezor says, quote, about AOP integration, not supporting AOP will lead to helping the government to fence people on exchanges, and our motivation to add direct support was exactly to keep the government from doing so. And my response was, that makes no sense. How does it do that? This sounds as dumb as saying, you'll get your freedom back if you just comply with all the dictates that throw your freedom in the garbage. And, you know, in the age of, like, watching piece by piece, inch by inch, them take every single amount of control and power that they can, I don't want to participate in that, right? I don't want to be supporting or helping that along in any way, shape, or form. So I started off the day in not a good mood. I'm like digging into this and I'm like, really? Really, Trezor? Really, Bitbox? You know, my first thought was like, crap, you know, my friends and family use these two wallets. Like I'm going to have to, what are we going to do? Like switch all of this stuff out or plug it into, you know, I'm just going to tell them that they can't use the Trezor wallet or the default Bitbox app, you know? And now I got to, you know, figure out some stupid sponsor crap and, you know, potentially have an argument with somebody about this. I didn't want to do that. That's not how I wanted to spend my day. So anyway, before we get further into it, I just want to, because a lot of people have DM'd me, says, have you seen this? Bitbox invading people's privacy, Trezor, should I throw my Trezor away? And all this stuff. People keep asking me this. So to calm everyone down, no, that is not at all what the thing that was implemented is. It is not a security risk. It is not going to give up you're not going to lose your privacy to anybody that you don't want to give your private information to. It is a signing protocol. That is all it is. It is something that your wallet can already do. It's just doing it in one step as opposed to like three steps. And I'll get into more specifically what it is, but your BitBox is not at risk here. You're not giving up any information. You're not losing any privacy by using a Trezor or a BitBox. Well, actually, I guess now Trezor said they were going to remove it because, you know, the Twitter mob has gotten up in arms, you know, I participated as I just read to you, and everybody's being really dramatic about it. But really, this, to me, in a general sense, this is pretty much a nothing burger. But I can understand the feeling around it. Well, just because that was my first reaction, that this was how I felt about it. And so I want to talk about the trade-offs of why we would or wouldn't want something like that, something like this, like AOP. And I think there is an important consideration. There's an important trade-off to talk about, because there is a degree of, oh, if the travel rule got implemented in the United States, wouldn't it be handy to have something like AOP? But this is not a new regulation in Switzerland and the Netherlands. It's an old one. And it is something they've been having to deal with for 2 years, almost 3 years now. And the issue is far more nuanced than obviously I had originally thought. So I'm going to try to break it down as best I can here. So we'll just start with AOP. What is the AOPP? It's a protocol. And to call it a protocol, like it's just a set of instructions. It's just a standardized set of instructions for signing an address, signing with an address. Understand, this is not the regulation. This is not some requirement that your wallet does. It's got nothing to do with how big your transactions are. It's not communicating with anybody. It's not sending information. It's not connecting to a FATFA database. Nothing at all like that. In fact, if it wasn't referred to as the Address Ownership Provenance Protocol, which is what AOPP stands for, or Proof Protocol, excuse me, but if it wasn't referred to that, which I think is really bad naming, honestly, because it's implying what you want to use it for, when there's actually a lot of pro-privacy uses you could have for this thing. All this thing is a easier way to sign with an address. So, you know, LNAuth, we talked about that a lot on the show, or LNURL, where you can literally sign a message with your Lightning wallet to log in to a website or something. It's the same thing. That's almost like functionally, that's exactly what it is. But we're not mad at LNAuth. We're not mad at LNURL. We want those things, right? Because we could use them for privacy. You could technically do the same thing with one that signs with an address rather than your Lightning pub key. You could have it so that you log in to a website just by signing that address, and you don't even have to have any Bitcoin attached to it or anything like that. You could just have an address that is totally just used for a unique identity or a unique user account on some service somewhere. And then you could just make it so that your Bitcoin wallet signed with that every time you wanted to log into Twitter or whatever website. Again, it's just signing with your public key. And all wallets, well, not all wallets, some software wallets don't have this functionality, but literally all wallets can do this. I mean, that is all a wallet does. It's just a signing device. And what this is doing is allowing you to sign with a message as opposed to signing a transaction. And you can do this with, I've done this with my Cold Card, I've done this with RTL on my BTC Pay server, I've done this with my Breeze wallet to log into LN Markets. This is not new. This is, the functionality of this is not a security issue, it's not a privacy issue, it is the same thing that all wallets do all of the time. So what makes this unique? Why is everybody freaking out? It's because of why this is being used. It's not the tool itself. Is not an issue. I'll have one tiny caveat, is that because it's being made easier, because what is usually something you go into settings and advanced and sign message and paste in your message and sign it and it gives you an output and you copy that and you paste it somewhere else. Right now, the process is really just annoying, so nobody does it. That's why most people don't even know your wallet can do this. This is making it a URL-based thing, or a URI, which is kind of the same thing, but it's a slight distinction. So like a URL is specifically HTTP, http://www.google.com. A URI may have a URL in it, but a URI gives slightly more instructions. So like you would have like torrent:// and then an address to talk to a torrent, or to direct you to torrent information, or mail:// and then guy@gmail.com. You have an email address. The URI is something that just has kind of another layer of instruction to direct what kind of information is coming next. And it could just be a URI that says, you're about to get a URL, here's the URL. And it can have like a couple extra little pieces like, it's a URL with these identifiers, like, you know, make sure you go to this website with this parameter and this referral link, and you have, it's logging in with this user or something. It's just slightly more instructions. But again, it's just this basic functioning of URI. It's not any different. It's just that the wallet can now read that. However, the caveat here into kind of make sense of the people who are saying this is a security issue, I think there's at least a fair argument or something worthwhile to bring up, that if your wallet does an additional thing that might not be necessary and it's communicating or opening up a URL, a set of instructions or something, or communicating with somebody on the internet, that there is some added attack vector, that whatever the tiny fractional increase in, something could go wrong, then sure, this could technically be considered a very, very slight increase in the attack surface. Just like adding any sort of functionality or feature or anything to a software wallet means that there is another thing that could break or could go wrong. This is why, and we've talked about this quite a bit on the show, the engineering perspective, the principles of security are simple. Simple makes better. And that's why specifically, like with my BitBox or basically any of my hardware wallets, my Keystone or anything, I always download the Bitcoin-only firmware rather than the Bitcoin and all the crypto crap firmware, because I want it to do less. Like, maybe I'm not at any realistic additional risk. You know, adding, 20 cryptos that use pretty much the same sort of key models and same types of signatures and are essentially copy pastas of roughly the same degree of functionality with, their own little crypto twist on it, that's probably really not going to put me at risk, right? Like, I don't think everybody who has a hardware wallet that supports 50 shitcoins is like 50 times less protected than the one that only does Bitcoin. It's probably like 99.9% the exact same security model. But nonetheless, if it does more, more can break. More could technically be vulnerable. So that is always just a decent rule. And one could make the argument that adding something like this, Bitcoin client had a payment protocol, which is not really unlike this, but it never actually got off the ground. People didn't use it because there's, even with the Bitcoin client, even with something that is, these things are built with complete security in mind. Like, that is the whole point of all of this, is to be as secure as possible. There was at least, a number of people who were like, there's no reason to do that. QR codes are easy, so why not just ignore it? And so it ended up getting removed at some point. I don't remember exactly the time frame, and I think it was like BIP 70 or something like that. I don't remember. But going back to AOP, what makes AOP different is from the normal signing that happens in a hardware wallet or happens in a software wallet. The thing that makes AOP different is simply that it has a URI. It is more of a web accessible ability to do this with one click, as opposed to a copy paste, go into settings, paste, sign, copy, go back to your Exchange, paste, setup. That is the difference, and that is the tool itself. So from that perspective, am I going to stop using my Bitbox because AOP is there? No. I didn't stop using it because you could sign a message. Like, it's a signing device. That's what it does. Am I going to stop using my Trezor? No. I'm not even a huge fan of Trezor. And no offense to everybody who loves Trezor. I tend to not, even though I still have a wallet that I've had on it for ages, and the thing has been, you know, reliable for me for a very long time, for some reason I have just kind of grown away from the Trezor. I can't even tell you why. I'm just not that big of a fan of it anymore, even though I still do use it from time to time, but I'm not going to stop using it because of this. Like, I'm not worried about my funds or my privacy. I don't think this affects it at all. And maybe I'm stupid and somebody else can explain why this would, but I don't see how it does in any meaningful sense. I mean, right now I have a browser plugin that lets me click on a QR code to open up my Lightning wallet to fill in information for a transaction and then sign it and go. This is literally that just for a message. You know, I don't think that wallet, I mean, that is a hot wallet, but that's why I think of it as less secure, because it's a hot wallet, not because I can click on a URL and it automatically opens the wallet. So from that perspective, no, your Trezor is not at risk. No, your Bitbox, okay, oh, crap, I keep forgetting. Trezor is not implementing this anymore. But let's, for the sake of this, because Trezor is the first one I heard about, and then now the Bitbox and Edge Wallet, I think, is still, Edge Wallet hasn't removed this. Sparrow and Blue Wallet announced they were going to remove it. Again, I think this is all really just theater. But, you know, it is what it is. I'm not gonna hate on anybody. But I want the truth of the matter to be known. And I want people making a decision based on the real reasons why you might actually want to make this decision. You know, don't trust Verify. That's why we're here, right? So now the question is, why the outrage? Why was this built? And what the hell is the regulation exactly? That's where some of this starts to understandably feel gross. So the Financial Actions Task Force, otherwise known as FatFox, or my favorite comment under yesterday's thread by our boy BTC Sessions, Freedom Attacking Totalitarian Fox. That's a pretty good one, but FATFA, F-F-A-T-F, a bunch of unelected, self-important tyrants put in place by the G7, who believe that they can just dictate rules for people, and a bunch of sovereign governments decide that, yeah, we're going to just enforce whatever they say. They have issued guidance years ago, by the way, a travel rule saying that over some subset, some certain amount of money, that any financial or they called it the VASP, but what was that? It was a virtual asset service provider, which is just anybody who lets you buy or sell Bitcoin or crypto, that they were going to have to register and report. Obviously, KYC AML with an additional tagged on to that of, you have to report the transaction and the person has to testify that the address that they are withdrawing to from the virtual asset service provider, the VASP, they have to attest to the fact that that is their address. And this was implemented, in fact, this was implemented worse than even the guidance was requested. So they went above and beyond. So Singapore, Switzerland, and the Netherlands. And I also heard or saw in some conversation that Germany and Austria as well. I don't know. I wasn't able to confirm Germany and Austria. So if anybody wants to clarify or add any comments or whatever under this on Twitter for any other countries they know that are actually implementing this, that would actually be really helpful for people, I think. But Switzerland went above and beyond this, include the identification of private wallets, of the address itself. Whereas I don't think that, like, the explicit, like, on-chain address was even necessary. This is just something that a couple of these countries have actually done. But again, this was back in 2019. This was basically 3 years ago that this got implemented. So the people in Switzerland are having to deal with this. This is something that the exchanges dropped the ball, bent over backward and said, yes, please, can I have some more? And just did whatever the hell FATFA and there was no resistance to this. They just implemented it and decided to go a little bit step further and like, you know, let's just go ahead and assume that this is going to get worse and be even more intrusive into the privacy of our users and customers. Of course, the users have to be fully doxxed, all the same KYC AML stuff, but in explicitly these countries, these states, you have to prove that the address you are withdrawing to, the address that you give the exchange, is in fact yours. Now, when I'm using Swan Bitcoin, like the US, all the major exchanges and places to buy Bitcoin and all of these things, you have to KYC yourself, right? You know, I did the same thing with Swan. I did the same thing with Cash App, like any and everything that I do Bitcoin with in the mainstream, like the big companies, unless you're using BISC or, local Bitcoins, you have to do that now too. Or you're doing a meetup, you're getting non-KYC Bitcoin, all the major services, you have to do that. That is how financial bullshit works. But I have essentially plausible deniability, right? If I give an address to Swan Bitcoin or to Cash App, which I can't get any money. I can't get my Bitcoin out unless I give them an address. It's not like it's new that you have to give an address to them and that they would have some record of the transactions they did. I mean, they're sending the transaction. They have to know where they're sending it to. So again, that is not something new either. It's not like you can get your Bitcoin without giving somebody an address to give it to. But there is plausible deniability. I can at least say if I withdrew from Swan or Cash App or Strike or whatever it is that, oh, this was a payment to my lawn guy, or I was actually sending this to a friend and I can't remember exactly who it was, but this is not my address. It's my Bitcoin. I can send it wherever the hell I want, right? Like, it's none of their business. It's none of their business where I'm sending it to. I could be sending it to my grandmother. I could be sending it to a burn address. I could be sending it to a charity to support the trucker convoy in Canada. It doesn't matter. It's mine. I should be able to send it where I want. What this travel rule does in Switzerland is allow the exchange to limit where and how you can send it. And a lot of users, well, unfortunately, a lot of crypto people, you know, they're just trading. So they're going to go from, I don't know any exchanges in Switzerland, we'll just say BitSwiss for the sake of simplicity. They're going from the BitSwiss exchange and then they're sending it straight to Binance or FTX or BitMEX or something, and then trading a bunch of cryptos and leverage trading and all those great ways to lose tons of money. And then they send it back to the exchange. So they never even send it to their own wallet. They're just, you know, a lot of people are just using it that way. Well, now they technically can't do that with the travel rule because they have to attest that where they are sending it to belongs to you. And this is the exchange limiting, restricting how you can use the Bitcoin that is in their possession. They are saying, no, you can't send it to any other place except an address that we can explicitly write down, we can register as belonging to you. So why does this matter? Why would they do that? Why would it care? Why would they care whether or not you have an address or whether or not the address you're sending it to is in fact yours? Here's where I think this is coming into play, is they want the analytics to be certain. They want to be able to know beyond a shadow of a doubt or with legal certainty that this address belongs to you. And that this is the creeping thing, you know, Shinobi talks about this, a couple other people posted about Chain Anchor and, you know, Chainalytics, that they're trying to, when they essentially put in digital IDs and all of this crap, they want to be able to have a list of addresses that are explicitly tied to this person when all of this data gets shared and accumulated by regulators and government institutions so that the blockchain analysis is far more reliable than it is when you only have like an 80% certainty that the address that everybody is withdrawing to. Obviously, they know, like, you know, if Mt. Gox or whatever has an address that I sent Bitcoin to, they're going to assume when they send that information to chain analysis or whatever it is, that company is going to be like, okay, this is probably Guy's address. I mean, it's connected to his account. And then they're going to try to look at all my transactions and trace that on the blockchain. And I think part of the point of this regulation is to continue to creep, to get further and further into making sure we know exactly whose addresses are whose and making it easier to track that. And that's why I think you should send it to Wasabi as soon as you get it to your own personal wallet, because you don't want that connection. You are owed your basic privacy. So mix, CoinJoin, and resist as much of the addition of any of this bullshit as you possibly can. But understand, in Switzerland, in Singapore, in the Netherlands, the people who are having to do this and have had to do this for 3 years, they are not losing plausible deniability because they didn't have it. They are legally obligated to put in an address that they attest to as being theirs. So if they wanted to say, oh, this is plausible deniability, that this is actually my friend's address, they would actually be in violation of it because they're not allowed to put their friend's address in there. They are already attesting to it. And in fact, the ways that they are attesting to it now that they are allowed to do are way worse than just signing a message with the single address. And unfortunately, it appears that the customers are actually using the worst methods, like sharing their XPubs, which means that they can see every single address they are ever going to create, or they're taking a screenshot of their wallet to prove that the address is among their transaction history or being actually generated by their wallet, which again is worse. Then you can see all sorts of other transactional data, other addresses that are associated with your wallet. That's not good. We don't want customers to have to do this. But they can still sign with an address. And some of them do. But here's the thing. Doing so is a pain in the ass. It's hard. It directs them to an FAQ that shows them like a 5-step process that goes into advanced settings and tells them how to sign with a thing. And it's just not an easy, it's complicated. So they either use the worse privacy methods of taking a screenshot of their wallet or sharing their XPub, or worst of all, in my opinion, they don't do it. They stop right there at the, oh God, I have to do this weird complicated thing that I'm unfamiliar with. Therefore, I'm not going to do it. I'm going to leave my coins on the exchange. And this is the trade-off. This is the issue, I think, that is the important thing to consider whether or not we care to have this or want to fight against something that makes this easy, no matter how innocuous or irrelevant the tool itself is. What is our hierarchy of value in the difference between self-custody and privacy? So here is my thinking on it. If I wanted to put in a hierarchy of what I think is the most valuable course of action or what is the most critical thing for people to do, I believe holding your own keys is above privacy. Because holding your own keys is number one, privacy is number two. Now, in this situation, it's arguable whether or not there is even a privacy trade-off because you've already given up your privacy. We're already talking about using a KYC exchange that you have to attest to your address being exactly this one. These people do not have plausible deniability on BitSwiss or whatever the exchange is because they're being forced to do this already. This travel rule is in place. But let's assume it's a trade-off and we're actually deciding one or the other. I think holding your own coins comes before privacy for the simple reason that if you are holding your own coins, you at least have options. If an exchange has your coins for you, neither do you have privacy, nor do you have any option if somebody comes to freeze your account or attack you or confiscate the funds from you. They're gone by default because they aren't even yours. You don't even own them if someone is holding them on your behalf. Now, if you are willing to give up your privacy, you're opening yourself up to a regulatory attack. You're letting the state or any potential adversary know exactly where you are and how much you own. And it is crucial that we protect this in any way that we can. But there are so many different avenues where that's just not even an option. It's certainly not an option for the majority of people, or at least not yet. I hope it will be. I hope we come out on the other side of this thing and we actually are able to maintain our privacy in all sorts of new ways. That's what I'm betting on. That's the reason I think this is all critically important, that we understand and we know what the hell we use these tools for and what we build for. So are we more worried about the encroaching, invasive regulatory environment affecting our ability to hold our own coins, to make it harder to withdraw, to limit who we can send to and how quickly we can, how much we can even own ourselves, and we want to prioritize the ease of getting our coins first, getting them behind our keys and in our possession? Or are we more concerned about the idea that we're building reactionary tools? You know what I mean? Like that the regulatory environment has gone against us, or at least in Switzerland in these situations, the regulatory environment is already in a position to take that from them, to limit that. So are we building tools that make it appear as if the friction for implementing this elsewhere has now been lowered? But with the unfortunate caveat that we could possibly be throwing a bunch of Swiss Bitcoiners under the bus by doing so, by putting them in a position where they're going to leave their Bitcoin on the exchange or give up more privacy, give up more sensitive information than if they were just signing with an address because it was easy to do. My conclusion, what I have come to after digging into all of this, I am not concerned about this. I'm not worried about AOP, I think. I wish it wasn't being used for the reason it's being used, but I do not think of this as a security concern. I'm not going to stop using my BitBox. I'm not going to cancel my sponsorship and tell people they shouldn't buy a BitBox. I don't really think this is an important consideration in that. I think the reason, and I almost am a little bit sad that Trezor and Blue Wallet have limited this such that people in Switzerland might not be getting coins off of the exchanges. And I mean, maybe that's unfounded. Maybe there is still just an easy way to do this. I've never had to do this with any of my exchanges. You know, I just give an address and then I get my Bitcoin, and that's what I'm worried about, right? And maybe there's still something here that I'm not seeing. Maybe there's still an element of this that I am dismissing or pushing under the rug. But at the top of my hierarchy is hold your keys. If we can make that easier, even if that means we have to design a tool in response to a regulation to limit our privacy leak and to make it easier for someone to withdraw, I think that is probably a net positive, not a net negative. And when I was thinking about this, how I felt about this yesterday, it's what got me, I actually posted out a tweet. I didn't say that it was related to this, but it's what got me thinking about it. And the tweet was, the best way to make bad regulation obsolete is to implement and use the solutions before the dictates arrive. When there is already a solution, when there is already a standard, major businesses will simply adopt it to save money and time. They will adopt it because it's the standard that everyone is already using. They want to be, this, I'm not even quoting anymore, I'm just rambling, but they want to be able to connect to network with the community and the infrastructure already in place. Therefore, the regulators trying to undo that, trying to reverse whatever privacy measure or tooling, you know, maybe QR codes are too private for some reason, just as an example, it's going to be insanely difficult to regulators to undo it. It'll be super costly because the easy thing to do and the only way to be part of the ecosystem is to adopt the scanning of a QR code, is to adopt, non-reused addresses or whatever it is the standard becomes. So that's the idea I was trying to get across. And that's why, like, let's say we already had a significant privacy measure involved. Let's say that we were actually paying each other with paynims already, rather than paying each other via addresses. Well, then it would already be obsolete if the only way the exchange was able to pay out to people was to a paynim that they didn't know exactly the address. And what you did is you just made your paynim the quote-unquote your registered paynim, but you could have one completely detached from you, right? You could just have one explicitly for that exchange. Maybe that would actually benefit the situation. If we can build the tools and the standards for better privacy to protect ourselves, to, you know, use Lightning where there's not this huge history of like this explicit chain of payments, and you can't just look at my public key and see all of the payments I have sent or received because there's no history of it. It's just in my node. It's private. I mean, obviously there is a degree of network analysis. There's always, you know, privacy is a spectrum, right? There's only so far that you can go, and it is a constant battle of making the tools better, making the networks better and more resilient and more protected and more efficient in securing that privacy and your keys without actually sacrificing the use of it, without adding excessive delays or too many resource costs, all of the things that usually come with the trade-offs of actually having privacy and sovereignty. Now, talking more directly at this situation and at, you know, the situation with Bitbox in particular, because they are in Switzerland, they are a Switzerland-based company. The thing is that they have like a huge subset of Swiss customers who have to do this with all of their exchanges. Now, I don't think Bitbox is going to make any more money because they have implemented AOP. I don't think they're going to, you know, advertise that like, oh, we're AOP compatible or whatever, and then they're going to get this flood of new customers. I think they're trying to avoid support tickets. I think they're trying to help their customers get the money off of the exchange to actually hold their own keys, because they're probably getting a bunch of people who are like, I don't know how to do this. The exchange is saying I have to sign for my address. I don't even know what that means or how to do it. Let's say one out of four people in that situation may have actually just left their coins on the exchange. If that process is then made into a one-step obvious process, because the wallet just knows how to sign quickly rather than having to go into settings and copy, like, you know, a four-step confused process. It's just a one-step easy process. If that means that one out of four then actually withdraws their coins rather than leaving it on an exchange, then is that not better to have as opposed to not have? But then for those who say, no, we should never build tools that make the experience of compliance easy and the frustration or the inconvenience that might cause is irrelevant, because we don't want to be reacting to a government regulation. We want to be proactive. We want to go straight to the next privacy thing rather than make the experience of compliance easier. Well, hell yeah, I can identify with that. But I worry when looking at, I worry we missed the boat on that one in Switzerland. You know, this was a 2019 law, not a 2021 law. It's not like if it's harder for Swiss users to get their coins, they're going to be like, oh, wow, we shouldn't have this regulation. And then my other worry is that it will have the opposite effect. You know, the reason privacy and sovereignty are so rare, that the tools that we use are not private tools or they're not sovereign tools. We don't run our own servers. We don't coin join. We don't, you know, run everything over Tor, is because it almost always comes with a ridiculous inconvenience or frustration or added cost. You know, I mentioned this earlier. It's always more steps. You have to actively go out of your way to make sure that you get it. And the vast majority of people just aren't going to. Normies are not going to learn how to sign a message manually. They're going to take a screenshot of their whole freaking wallet and they're going to upload it to BitSwiss. So if making that process easier, it might even mean that they're not giving as much information. It might mean that they're avoiding some other privacy leak because it's simple. I don't know. Those are my thoughts. And I think what the Twitter anger feels like to me, what it was when I first heard about this, was that it's kind of a delayed outrage about the travel rule itself, which rightfully is a ridiculous rule. And we should do everything we absolutely can from allowing it to spread. If they start pushing this shit in the US, we should be ready to unleash the freaking Kraken. But from what I see in this situation, that isn't the issue. This is an old law. The law isn't changing. The regulation isn't changing. AOP is not something that makes my wallet less secure. It's not some huge invasion of my privacy. It's not that, oh, they weren't having to do this and now AOP makes it so that everybody has to do this. It is a one-step message signing instead of a four-step message signing or whatever it is. That looks to be all it is. Unless I'm somehow totally missing something in a big way, but I tried to read every single thing I could about it. I read the spec. I read the Samurai wallet thread about it. I read the Trezor thread. I read a thing that Bitbox posted. I read whatever the web... I mean, you know, there's not... I don't know, I saved like 15 things or something and went through it all. But it's a pretty small amount of stuff, you know? This happened like 2 days ago. It's not like a whole lot of things to consider. Maybe I have. Maybe there is some huge thing that I've missed, but this is what I've gotten out of it so far. And for the sake of the people who are like, oh, you're just shilling for Bitbox because they're your sponsor. You know, I don't need Bitbox as a sponsor. You know, like I said, the minute I heard about this, I immediately was like, oh, this is awful. Understandably, the way it sounded. And I was totally ready for us to just go our separate ways when I thought this was something that it wasn't. It is great. It is wonderful having sponsors. Yes, but I'm not here to shill a bunch of shit that I don't use or I think is a bad product. You know, the network ads that I have at the beginning of this, you notice none of that is in my voice. That is the C-suite has, and I can only have some certain limits of like what goes there. And that relationship might not even stay. I don't know. I haven't fully decided about how I feel. Somebody said there was a Beyond Burger ad. Good Lord, I just removed all food items whatsoever from the possibility. I'm so sorry that somebody got an ad for some soy burger bullshit. But I will never personally tell you, you will never hear my voice saying you should get that product or to tell you to use something that I wouldn't use or that I wouldn't recommend to somebody that I love and I care about a lot. I obviously like to make money as opposed to not make money. I like having sponsors and I want to keep them. But outside of the fact that I just don't want to have a painful conversation with people that I like at Bitbox, I don't think I have reached the conclusion I have because I'm letting my opinion be censored or altered because of a paycheck. I like to think that I am more honest with myself than that, but I also am not just going to throw away a good product or a good relationship over some Twitter drama. I also don't think that is a good way to make a decision about something like this. So I'm happy to keep shilling Bitbox. I'm happy to keep using their wallet. Like I am not going to move any of my coins off of Bitbox. And AOP for the customers in Switzerland, it may very well be a way, and I think this is their whole reasoning, to increase the ease of self-custody and potentially protect them from even more invasive options of having to comply with this bullshit regulation. Now, I know everybody is up in arms about this, and I'm sure somebody's losing their shit right now that I've become a corporate shill or something. That's fine. I don't think that I have reached the wrong conclusion. Like I said, I tried to read and understand everything. It seems like the major argument that everyone is leaning on in the face of, you know, when somebody mentions that this is just a signing protocol, is the plausible deniability side of things, you know, like, and that is a perfectly reasonable thing. That's what Odell was talking about. That's really kind of what Samurai Wallet was talking about in their thread. But in my opinion, that's not really applying in this situation. That's applying regarding the regulation, regarding the travel rule. But the people in Switzerland and the Netherlands and Singapore don't have that. They lost plausible deniability in 2019. They have a regulatory requirement to put their address in the exchange. They haven't had it, and this is not taking that away from them. That becomes a consideration when somebody's trying to introduce the travel rule in another country, in a new jurisdiction, in the United States. Because signing or no signing, the travel rule is stating that you must use an address that is yours, that you own. And I think that is explicitly a tool to creep the surveillance state one step closer. And I'm completely against that. I do think that this is related to the chain anchor situation. I think that what they want is as thorough a database of who owns what address as possible so that they can see who is sending which transactions. That's what that's the reason all of this stuff exists in the banking sector. Why wouldn't it be exactly what they want in Bitcoin now that there's this whole new avenue that has been largely obscure to them? They want it to be not obscure. And that is why I think everybody who is currently required to prove that they own an address, or anybody using a KYC exchange, if you want your privacy, you should get your privacy because it's better for everybody else's privacy if you do, but you should send that from that address straight to a CoinJoin wallet because it is none of the state's business what you do with your money day to day or who you choose to do business with. It puts you at risk. It makes you vulnerable at their benefit. Privacy is not a privilege. It is a right. We do not ask permission for that. It is a basic right that is owed to us. It is their obligation to protect our privacy. And we should not lose sight of that being the fundamental position that we are arguing from. But I don't think AOP is a consequential part of that fight. In fact, it might be consequential in helping protect the people who have already lost ground in that fight, making sure that they can actually still get their coins and have privacy as an option because the exchanges are telling them where and when they can send their coins to their ownership or who they can send coins to. And that is none of their business. That is none of their business. Whether or not I own the address or not, they're my coins. I am making a transaction, and I don't even care if it's from their exchange. It's my money, and it's my choice where it goes. Anyway, I've rambled long enough about this. Like I said, I'm exhausted with this, and I'm not putting ads on this show. I guess there will still probably be a C-suite one, but I'm not gonna mention anybody. This is ad-free. I want everybody to listen to it. Let me know their opinion. Beat me up if you think I'm completely wrong. I'm happy to read all of the ways that I might be. I want to have a true idea of what this situation is and what the important considerations are. And yeah, that's that. That's this episode of Bitcoin Audible. Thank you guys for listening. I am Guy Swan. I'll keep trying to figure out what the hell all this crap is. Hopefully this was helpful to somebody. And you have a better idea of what's going on and whether or not you should throw your Bitbox in the trash or your treasure away or whatever it is. Yeah, we'll close it out. Thanks guys for listening. I'm Guy Swan. Until next time, everybody, take it easy.
You have been listening to Bitcoin Audible, a 111 production.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.